The Transatlantic Soccer Podcast is presented by AmherstWire.com, the digital-first student-run magazine of the University of Massachusetts. Please check out the site for more content.
Hello and welcome to the Transatlantic Soccer Podcast, Episode 3. Boys, how are we doing?
Doing well, how about you?
Pretty good.
Doing well, pretty yeah.
Homecoming weekend?
Yeah, it was a good weekend.
It was alright. So it wasn't too bad.
It was a long weekend.
A big long weekend.
Yeah, it was a long weekend.
And guess what? We do it all again this weekend.
Yeah.
All again this weekend for Halloween. Well, let's crack on. So, back from international break, obviously, before episode 2, international break, and now we've been treated to 2 full weeks of club soccer from all around the world. But first I want to recap on something we obviously discussed in episode 2, the whole racism, and especially in particular the England versus Bulgaria game. There's been some developments since then in the last week where Krasimir Balakov, the Bulgarian coach, has actually resigned. This came after a meeting between him and the Bulgarian Football Association. And of that meeting, it came that he decided to resign. He was quoted in saying, "I wish success to the next coach. The situation is not rosy at the moment. I've never been a coach in such an atmosphere." Speaking about the game against England, he said, "I tried to pick up the players in the locker room. There was no rebellion. The players were so mentally stressed by what was happening on the pitch that they lacked the energy to rebel." But on the other side, on the flip side, the Bulgarian Association said the performance of Bulgaria's men's national team in recent months has been described as unsatisfactory, which is why Balakov resigned. Boys, what do you think about these proceedings?
I mean, I think it's interesting that the FA from Bulgaria said that it had nothing to do necessarily with what happened.
Mm-hmm.
That he just, they kind of linked it back towards, you know, the results that they've been getting on the pitch. And yeah, that might have been a part of it, but I mean, like the coach Balakov himself said, you know, after a situation like that, it's like things are a lot different. It's hard to, you know, try to move on from that.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely is kind of interesting that he didn't really bring up the situation at all. I mean, I can understand why for his career, you know, he might not bring that up, but at the same time, I think that was something that he definitely should have addressed.
Definitely. He's definitely, in some ways, he's covered his ass, I'd say. But, you know, there's two contrasting quotes there. But, yeah, I mean, I guess the FA for Bulgaria's kind of made a decision, been like, yeah, we've got to oust this guy out because obviously it's not a good look for us. So it seems like a good decision on my part. But now let's crack into it. Let's look at our podcast picks from last episode. Disappointingly, myself, I didn't score a single point, but I am still ahead on the standings with 2. You guys did score 1 each with the Chelsea-Newcastle game, where you both got the correct result. So it is 2 to me and then 1 to both of you guys. So we will revisit podcast picks at the end of the episode for our next set of predictions.
I'm not worried about it.
Not worried about it. No. It's a long season. So
Comeback season.
It's a long season to gain some ground for sure. Josh, UMass men's soccer coming to the end of their season. What are the updates?
So they won in Philadelphia at LaSalle over the weekend 3-2. 2 goals were scored by Christian Lebeck and 1 by Quinn Serafino. And they can still make a run at the Atlantic 10 Championship depending on the results of George Washington and George Mason and a couple of other requirements, you know, head-to-head and goal differential, all that stuff. So it's looking a little tough, but still possible. And they have the final regular season game this Saturday at 1 p.m. at Red Field. So good luck to them, and hopefully, you know, they can just squeeze in that last spot and make it to the playoffs, so prolong their season a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, good luck to the boys. Hopefully we can get a few members of the team on the podcast in the coming weeks or months after their season does come to an end, whenever that may be. Alejandro, let's get into Premier League soccer action. We have had a great few weeks with numerous debates and topics to be discussed, but let's crack on with Liverpool's last result on Sunday evening.
I definitely thought it was a good result for Liverpool. It just shows again that this team just looks honestly unbeatable. They'll go behind a goal like that, and then to kind of rally together and to push and score two goals like that, I think it looks really good for the team. Can I say one thing though? I think Jordan Henderson is not a good player.
Agreed.
I don't know if that's a hot take or not, but I just watched him like whipping balls in from the right, and yeah. I did not see a single good delivery by Jordan Henderson. So
I don't think he's the best player either, but I don't think he's like, I mean, I don't think that's a hot take. I don't think anyone thinks he's that good.
Yeah,
no, there is. There is. I've met numerous Americans that think he's a good player.
And honestly, when Jordan Henderson lifted the Champions League trophy, it was a dagger to my heart. Because, I think he's such a mug. I don't think he's good at all. And the fact that he got to lift the Champions League trophy was disappointing. I mean, obviously, Liverpool's a good team, but...
Yeah.
I'll give it to him. He definitely puts in the effort. He definitely goes on the field and he works hard. But it's crazy to see how it's gone from, like, Steven Gerrard, a quality player, like week in, week out. And you know, he would have still put in that type of effort. But to just see it go to Jordan Henderson, and every time he gets on the ball, I'm like, what are you, you're just going to pass it sideways? Like, he's just going to turn around and pass it back to Lovren. Like, I don't know what.
He's definitely a guy that's found himself in the greatest of situations, like with Liverpool and with England as well. I mean, Liverpool, they've created a team around him. Like, he's not been moved out of the way by Fabinho or any of those players or Naby Keita, but he's been in the greatest of situations with Liverpool. They've got one of the greatest front threes in the European soccer right now. He's got amazing defense behind him. Obviously, Van Dijk's in the running of one of the top central defenders. And with England as well, got to a World Cup semi-final somehow with Jordan Henderson in centre mid. And he's not awful. Obviously, he's got to be somewhat good.
He's
a professional player. He does his bit.
I think he stays in the team a lot too, due to Naby Keita's injuries.
Yeah.
I think that's what I've always said. Since the season that they lost to Madrid in the Champions League final, and I said that Liverpool's weakness was always their midfield, because sometimes they would pull up with a midfield of Milner, Henderson, and Wijnaldum, which I personally just didn't think was good enough. But if you look at a midfield of Fabinho, Wijnaldum, and Naby Keita, I think that is a world-class midfield. So I think if Keita had a little bit more consistency in game time, you know, because he's always picking up a couple injuries, I think the Henderson playtime would be decreased a lot.
I was going to say, too, I'm more and more impressed every game I watch with Fabinho, especially as a defensive midfielder. I think it's impressive to see kind of how he's transformed as a player from initially at right back at Monaco to kind of moving in centrally. And at first I thought he was just going to be, you know, a big body just flying into tackles. But I was kind of watching more and more this game that he was playing passes into the danger area. He was looking for through balls, kind of trying to spread the width of the field. And I was just really impressed with kind of how he's developed as a player.
Yeah, he was definitely one of those players. I mean, I knew Manchester United win for him that summer that Liverpool signed him. And for me, that was it was a dagger to my heart as well, because Fabinho was one of those players that we wanted to, in essence, kind of replace Michael Carrick with. And we needed one of those players, and you know, instead we signed Nemanja Matic, which says it in itself. So, so Fabinho, great player. I agree with you. He's definitely shone in the last kind of 18 months or so. Let's move on to the other side and talk about Tottenham.
Yeah. You want to start with this one?
Well, yeah. I just wanted to say that obviously it's been really bad for Tottenham. You know, like they're in a bit of a crisis right now, and I remember towards the beginning of the Premier League, I was almost certain that they were going to be one of the teams in the top three. Mm-hmm. I even remember saying on a podcast, even though they're having a bit of a rough time, I thought they would pull out of it, and I kept on saying that the top three spots are locked in by City, Liverpool, and Tottenham, and that people would fight for the fourth spot. But now, more so, it looks like that just City and Liverpool are guaranteed that top four spot, and the last two spots are just open up.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird because Pochettino was doing such a good job with them, you know, only like a season or two ago. I mean, he's been doing a great job with that team, and to just see them now, they just look kind of like starved of ideas, lacking in creativity, and that team is like player for player, like a really good team. That's a very good team, and for some reason they're just not putting it together. Harry Kane looks kind of slow, like lethargic up top, and there's no one really providing any support to him otherwise. I mean, to see what like Lucas Moura did in the Champions League last year and that type of energy that he was providing, and then to go and look at Spurs now, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I agree. I personally think that Pochettino's taken Spurs as far as he can. I think he's one of those coaches where when his team are playing well, they're playing very well. But when I don't know if he's got the knowledge to how to kind of control the dressing room, because I think right now they're going off of a few things. Actually, I think Christian Eriksen and that whole situation with him, wanted to move during the summer, didn't get his move. He's obviously now looking like a player who doesn't really want to play for the club, or just is disinterested. He thinks himself that the team have gone as far as they can. Obviously, I mean, we still don't know if this is true, but did you guys hear about the thing about Vertonghen apparently was in an affair with Christian Eriksen's wife?
No, I did not. No.
So I don't know if that's... I mean, they dealt with that pretty well, because I haven't heard anything about that since. So maybe that's an inside kind of dressing room issue as well. And I think, just in general, I think Tottenham right now are lacking because they have failed to spend money, especially after moving into the new stadium. I think they all knew that they couldn't spend money, but that's when they needed money, and they are lacking right now because they didn't really inject any type of kind of new talent. They did sign Lo Celso, but he's been injured since he signed. Ryan Sessegnon, he's been injured since he signed, so there's not really been an inject of talent. So
they've also got Ndombele.
Ndombele, but you know, he's
coming,
he's good.
On.
He's
been
underperforming though.
I think personally that they missed out a lot with the Dybala signing.
Yeah,
I think that if they had been able to sign Dybala, regardless of assuming that they would have had to have gotten rid of Christian Eriksen, I think that would have been a really good signing for the club. And I think that a player of that like caliber, a player who can perform at that level, I think that would have been like huge for for this season.
I agree.
I personally think that Tottenham's problems are more off the field than they are on, because like you said, you know, Christian Eriksen wanting to leave, and then he's eventually going to leave for free because his contract is expiring. He's not going to renew. And there was even rumors of Pochettino wanting to leave at the end of the season, you know, before the Champions League final. He didn't really come out and say anything, but he said, you know, he hinted at possibly leaving, whether they won the Champions League final or not.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Daniel Levy, who's running the club, is a very, very, very stingy person when it comes to, like, letting people leave his club. So I feel like sometimes that can, although that is good, you know, not necessarily being a selling club, I think sometimes it can work against him in the case of like Christian Eriksen, where you're eventually going to lose him for free. And now Pochettino, obviously, because Pochettino didn't end up leaving because Daniel Levy said, oh, you're not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. You're our guy.
Yeah.
And then that can kind of create, you know, a little bit of tension between the relationship between you know, ownership and the club itself. So I feel like until they get all that off the pitch mess cleaned up, I think they're gonna continue to suffer on the field.
Do you think the Champions League final, we're talking about that as well, do you think that was a whole fluke, the way they, I mean, fair play to them, they got there on merit and got there on the performances, but was it a fluke in regards to they just caught Ajax on the night out and just made their way to the final? Because for me, I don't know. I don't think that they're not necessarily the second best team in Europe, or last season they weren't. So
yeah, I don't necessarily think they're the second best team in Europe either. But I think it's harsh to say that it's a fluke because they did take out City, who everybody seems to consider to be one of the top clubs in Europe. They took them out. You know, they got the job done at Hotspur Stadium with the 1-0 win with the Son goal. And then at the head-to-head, they obviously had that crazy game. And then, yeah, they did beat Ajax. You know, it was like that little bit of maybe lack of attention from Ajax in the final moments for you know, Lucas Moura to slip through and get that goal. And in the final itself, I didn't think they did that well, but I think that they do have a lot of quality players. But they, I mean, I guess the best way to sum it up is, did they overachieve? Yes.
Yeah.
But 100%. I don't necessarily think it was a fluke.
I agree with that completely. I think they took their opportunities that were definitely given to them, especially in that Ajax game. But I definitely wouldn't say that they were like the second best team in Europe. I mean, just look, you watch the final, you know what I mean? You could see the difference in, and to be fair to Spurs, they were without arguably their best player with, or they, he played, but he probably should not have been playing.
He was injured.
Injured. And you could tell when you watched him when he ran around the field.
Maybe they could have even won that final if Moura played as well, Lucas Moura, because they obviously pushed Harry Kane to be like, listen, you're our best striker. You know, Champions League and World Cup finals, they're the kind of things like, listen, if you're 80% and you're the best player, that you're going to play, because you never know when you're going to get to this position again. So it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Harry Kane probably pressured himself into it and probably maybe cost his team, you know, a historic first Champions League. So who knows? But Liverpool, on the other hand, still unbeaten, 6 points ahead of Manchester City, looking towards the Premier League title already. So talking about Manchester City, 3-0 victors over Aston Villa. Not much to say about this one, just, you know, typical City performance, dominant in possession. Sterling, Ilkay Gundogan, David Silva with the goals, had their regular share of possession, and title race is definitely heating up right now. Liverpool actually host City November 11th at Anfield, so that will be a feisty affair to say the least. And we actually move on to a record equaling victory for Leicester, 9-0 away to Southampton on Friday evening. Ties for the biggest away win in Premier League history, which the other game was Manchester United's 9-0 win against Ipswich in 1995. Did you guys watch this game?
Yeah, so I was just at home on Friday, you know, didn't even know that there was Premier League on Friday, just flipping through the channels, and I think it's a combination of Leicester being really on form and Southampton being just awful. Because, you know, Iosi Perez with the hat trick, looking like a, you know, everybody knew he had some quality when he came over from Newcastle. You know, Jamie Vardy getting his goals, James Maddison scoring a peach of a free kick. And the only thing, you know, that I have to say about this game is I think that Leicester, you can see it in the team that they're just so hungry. Because you look at the last goal that Jamie Vardy scored off the PK, and he's celebrating like
how much it meant.
Yeah, like it was a 90th minute winner, and the game was 0-0 the whole time. So, and they did not take their foot off the gas. They're just hungry, and they're, you know, they're in form. They're looking to capitalize on it. They're looking to, you know, maximize their points so that later on in the season, who knows, maybe if they do have some dip in form, that, you know, they can look in the past and say, oh, but we got these results here, so we're in a comfortable spot.
Yeah.
They're looking good. I like this Leicester team a lot. I think that they have a lot of quality in the team, especially in midfield. And I think that they're really going to push the other teams, the more the top teams, to really perform. And they're kind of letting teams know that if teams like City and Liverpool let off the gas, that they're going to be right underneath
them. On the heels. Well, yeah. I think they are. Leicester, after that victory, are 2 points behind City, so 8 points behind Liverpool, which is not a bad position to be in at all. Leicester, for me, if they carry on this form, they are not just in Premier League terms in the standings, but also with regards to their top players being kind of linked to Manchester United and whatnot and the biggest clubs around them. They're not putting pressure on themselves to sell, because their best players will be like, listen, if I'm in the Champions League and Man United are not, then what's the point in me staying? Absolutely, obviously there's a difference in club stature, but you know, James Maddison, Ndidi, those kind of players, even Soyuncu right now, he's looking like a great centre back. So the players like those, they'd be like, why do I have to leave? Because there's no, you know, Leicester really, like, I have such a soft spot for Leicester, and even now such a soft spot for Brendan Rodgers as well, because I underestimated him as a coach when he was at Liverpool, and Celtic's obviously a farmers league, so you don't really take much from that in his kind of achievements there. But yeah, right now he's got Leicester playing, like you said, Josh. He's got him hungry. He's got him listening. It doesn't matter if you win, if you're winning 5-0 at half time or whatever it was. Just got to keep going and just, you know, put him to the sword. So
it's kind of funny to, you kind of look at how both of these clubs have gone and kind of how they've been selling players recently. You look at the type, like the players Southampton has sold, and then you look at this and it's kind of like, well, clearly they have not been able to put that money to much good use. Clearly they have not been able to recover as a club after selling those players. So meanwhile, you look at Leicester, who sold you know, one of the best players in the Premier League, and you know, look at they're playing incredible and they're really competing. So it's just a weird dynamic, I guess.
I think Southampton have been on the downfall for a while.
Absolutely.
Their good times were way past them, you know, when they had Van Dijk and Mane and all those guys. You know, there was a joke that if you played well for Southampton, you'd get sold to Liverpool. But that has been the way in the past. They've been in a struggle. I'm surprised they're still in the Premier League this season, and I think it's just a matter of time before they actually go back down to the Championship.
Yeah, I think these two teams, when you look at it, and like you're saying, Alejandro, their success, I think it looks at the ownership. I'm not big on to looking into Southampton's, you know, the opinions of their fans, but I know that their fans have been kind of critical about their ownership. And as a kind of a contrast, the Leicester's ownership, like, there's probably one of the best kind of group of owners that in the Premier League. They take care of the fans, they take care of situations on and off the field, they put their money in the right places, like this, like for the Maguire deal, they I think they got in total, I think it's 85 million or something like that, but they got demanded a 75 million upfront in cash. So that's, you know, that's a great deal, and they put their money wisely and they don't spend too much, and they definitely don't sell their players for too little. So
it just makes me wonder where Southampton kind of put a lot of those funds. I don't know exactly how much Mane went for, you know, I don't know exactly how much Alana went for, but like I know all of that on top of the Van Dijk transfer. I just wonder where that money went into.
Back pockets of the owners, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, we don't know, but we've definitely not seen it being interjected into the team, because, you know, I don't think they signed, who did they sign during the summer? They signed that teenager striker from Belgium. That's the only one I can think of. No one probably more than, you know, 20 million, 25 mil. So we'll see. But anyway, I just want to praise the Lord right now. Put your hands up and hallelujah. Manchester United, Premier League away win. Hallelujah. Oh, my God.
What a result.
What a result against Norwich.
Incredible result.
What a result. I love this. Manchester United, hallelujah. 3-1 victors against Norwich City. McTominay, Rashford, Martial with the goals. Onel Hernandez for Norwich getting the consolation goal at the end. Finally, an away Premier League win. I was watching the performance and somewhat dominant. I wouldn't say overly dominant. I think we were assisted by VAR. We obviously got two penalties that probably the first one wasn't a penalty, but neither were scored. Even though I think those could kind of they had psychological effects on the Norwich team going through the game. But the big point I want to make is Anthony Martial and his effect coming into the United team after having a spell on the sidelines, being injured. Do you think him and Rashford are kind of, I don't want to say Dwight York and Andy Cole, but are they kind of, I know I'm going to get crucified for that one, but I think, yeah, Are they showing those kind of signs, especially with this win? I know it's early days, and I know I'm getting too excited, but do you think these two could work together?
I think that Martial and Rashford are both very similar players.
You think?
I think that they can both be played as a nine down the middle, and they can both play out on the left.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Martial especially started off more as a central striker when United bought him from Monaco, and has kind of shifted out towards the wing. But I think they're both exceptional players. I'm just interested in seeing exactly how their how they're played together. Whether it's Ollie or if he gets sacked, whatever manager they pick up moving forward. Because you know, a lot of there is that debate. Like, for example, where do you think either of them plays better? Like,
I think Martial. I mean, it's hard because I think Martial is the better finisher, so therefore I put him down the center. But then again, I think Martial is more dangerous, a dribbler, and he'll twist up any right back's ankles. So I think that's where I'd put him. But it's a tough one because Rashford's so hit and miss. I mean, he has been of late. But obviously he's hopefully with his goal at the weekend, he's coming back to his form and being an exciting player again. Hopefully, like I was going to say, like the pressure that was on Rashford's shoulders being the only recognised striker when Martial was out, and obviously having Lukaku sold, I think that was weighing him down so much. And obviously you can't blame him, he's a 21-year-old kid, I think either 21 or 22. But with Martial, I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will definitely look to see a way how they can interject both left and right, left and centre, in tactical terms, because the way those two could play, both switching during the game and stuff, will probably cause havoc for a lot of teams. And maybe, I don't want to get too excited again, but maybe we'll see Manchester United shooting up the ranks, because they did make a big leap in the table from 14th to 7th. So hopefully we can keep it up. I think we do have a good run of games coming up, so we should see hopefully if Man United keep that up. But I kind of want to touch on a subject that and a player that we've probably not discussed so far in this podcast, and that is Daniel James. He had a superb assist to Rashford's goal. He's been a player where we didn't really, because of the price tag, I don't think we expected, as Man United fans, the fan base didn't expect a lot of kind of output from Daniel James. But $20 million signing from Swansea City, who were Championship team, is he the bargain of the season in the Premier League?
I think he looks good for 20 million. Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know that. I mean, that's very cheap to get kind of the product that, like, the end product that they're getting out of him. Mm-hmm. I mean, for 20 million buys you about a quarter of a player nowadays. Yep. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think for him to be definitely in the team and playing is huge right off the bat for a $20 million dollar player. I don't know if I should say a bargain of the season or not. I'm not sure. A lot of players have been competing really well this season.
I think Daniel James is a perfect player to be the super sub. Mm-hmm. I still think United need another, you know,
I agree, yeah.
Winger. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think you can line up with Martial, Rashford, and Daniel James and expect to, you know, besides the other numerous problems that United have right now. But I think he's a good player. You know, he's young, he's unproven. Mm-hmm. So I think that a club like United often kind of need players like that who are gonna come in and be hungry to prove themselves, rather than, like, you criticized the signing of Matic earlier.
Yeah.
Who was a player who, you know, on his day in Chelsea when they won the league, he was superb for them. But, you know, he's coming into United, you know, he's a proven player in the past. So, you know, when things start going bad, he doesn't necessarily, you know, feel like he has anything. You know, he doesn't have to prove himself.
Mm-hmm.
But with a player like Daniel James who's coming up from Swansea, the Championship, he has that hunger inside of him to show people, you know, like, oh, I'm in the Premier League, I can do it in the Premier League.
Mm.
But I think he still has a ways to go to develop into a player that can necessarily be starting for Manchester United.
Mm-hmm.
But for the price that they bought him, I definitely think it was a good signing for them.
Definitely a good signing, and he'll be on the club for a while, obviously. And he's going to have plenty of room to improve. And again, whether or not Ole stays, I hope that they definitely keep Daniel James and try to, you know, improve him as a player, because I think eventually he could be a really, really good player.
Well, he's definitely no Nicolas Pepe, so which is good.
Absolutely, you know, he's no Pepe. No one on this is a Pepe.
Yeah, because Nicolas Pepe should be playing in, like, the fourth division.
Ooh, probably, he should probably be playing for Barcelona, to be honest.
But Barcelona, what, U14s maybe? No.
Barcelona B.
Barcelona B. Yeah. Just sub. But yeah, so I think Daniel James, I can't think of many players, obviously. I think he's a Welsh wizard. He's Ryan Giggs reincarnated.
Yeah, I could see that.
So yeah, let's move on to another result at the weekend. And another topic that I want to kind of ask you guys, rather than myself, ask you guys. Chelsea 4, Burnley 2, an away win. Chelsea go to 7 wins in a row. I feel like I underestimated them for sure. They're a young team with obviously Frank Lampard, who's a rather inexperienced manager. Second season of managing a professional team. Are they actually genuine top 4 contenders, or are they just going to burn out during the winter months?
I think that due to kind of the youthfulness on the team, I think they'll push for it. To be honest, I don't think that they'll be able to finish in the top 4. I think that just kind of the inexperience on the team, I think that eventually they're going to hit a wall. And I think that, you know, again, with how youthful this team is, I think they might be hard. It might be hard for them to kind of break through. However, I think that they've been really, really, really good this season, especially with how young the team is, and especially with Frank Lampard not, you know, being exactly the most proven manager, and for him to kind of take this team of young talent, players that they got back in on loan and such, and to kind of put them together into this team, I think they look really good.
Yeah.
I think you have to just applaud Frank Lampard and the job he's done. And I personally want to apologize. I didn't think Chelsea were going to be bad, but going back to the beginning of the season, like I said, my prediction for the top 4 was Liverpool, City, Tottenham in third, and then I did end up saying in our first podcast that I thought maybe Arsenal would fight for that fourth spot. And I think that the clubs like Arsenal, who signed Nicolas Pepe, and
bad player.
Spurs, who went out and got Ndombele and made these big signings.
Mm-hmm.
I overlooked the clubs like Leicester and Chelsea, who Chelsea had a transfer ban. They couldn't even sign any players.
Yeah.
And yet they're still coming out and performing this well. And I think that, you know, Chelsea is that club that historically always loans out these young players. Like Tammy Abraham,
mm-hmm.
Tomori, Reece James, Mason Mount,
yeah.
Way back in the day, you think of Nathan Ake, who then went to Bournemouth.
Yeah.
Lucas Piazon, who was this huge Brazilian promise who never
played like 2 games.
Yeah, he never got a chance for Chelsea. And now you see them being forced to use their youth players. And I think that, you know, the transfer ban was a bit of a blessing in disguise for Chelsea.
Yeah,
because now, you know, and especially since they brought in Frank Lampard, I thought that was the best thing that they could have done.
Yeah,
because I felt like he came in with not much pressure because people were not expecting him to work miracles without being able to sign players. So, you know, they were like, okay, hey, Sarri's gone, but we're still in Champions League. We have a transfer ban, so let's set up a long-term project. We know this season might not be, you know, we're not going to be competing for Champions League trophies. We're not going to be competing for the Premier League. But let's work to close that gap in between the top teams. And I think they executed their plan perfectly. And I mean, you know, if you add a couple pieces to this team in the next summer transfer window, I think they could, you know, start pushing towards those top clubs.
Yeah,
it's definitely a breath of fresh air to see a team do this well without, you know, putting $150 million into the team, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I definitely do want them to add a couple more pieces, but at the same time, I kind of hope that they don't go out and just buy out the world and just totally get rid of all these young players that have been, you know, performing so well for them. You know, I'm crossing my fingers that they don't do that.
Yeah,
next season.
I hope not either. I totally agree with you guys. I totally underestimated Chelsea, Frank Lampard, and all their players and whatnot. I didn't think that Roman Abramovich, the owner, I didn't think he would be content with adopting this plan of trusting the youth and trusting Frank Lampard, who's an inexperienced manager. And I'm all for it. Like, I love seeing young, exciting football played by young and exciting individuals. I love Mason Mount. I love Tammy Abraham. I love Tomori, especially. I don't know. Tomori is kind of that dark horse where he doesn't shine during games, but he's always reliable.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so he's one that I really love. But yeah, moving on to their, well, not their own, they didn't sign him during the summer, but last January they signed Christian Pulisic for around $60 million. I mean, I still stand by it during, despite his hat trick at the weekend, but he, for me, he's still a little boy. I know, you know, I mean, I know he did well for Dortmund and he's only, what, 19, 20, 21 years old, but I just, something about this hat trick is, I think people, especially Americans, because I know you guys think this guy's the next coming of Jesus.
A perfect hat trick.
Yeah, perfect. it was a perfect hat trick. But I think you guys, Americans, like kind of view him as like the next Messiah.
I personally don't think that highly of him.
Okay.
I actually don't. I don't think that he's this world beater.
Yeah.
But I do think he's a good player. I think he's a player that's good enough to start for a club like Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, not necessarily that they're similar players, but in terms of talent-wise, I think he's comparable to someone like Willian, who has been starting on the right wing for them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Willian, you know, he was never world-class. You know, there was, the last season they had with Conte where he won their player of the season, he was doing very well. But, you know, he's also very inconsistent. You know, you could see that not only in Chelsea, but in the Brazilian national team as well. I think that Pulisic will, he still needs to develop a little more, and I think he'll develop into a player that's, you know, good enough to start for Chelsea on that right wing, but I don't think he's going to be as good as someone like Hudson-Odoi, mm-hmm. who's going to be playing on the left wing. But, you know, you look at a front three for Chelsea moving forward of Hudson-Odoi, Pulisic on the right, and then down the middle, you know, Tammy Abraham or Batshuayi.
Yeah.
I personally think that that is the one spot that Chelsea, you know, as good as Abraham has been doing, I think that if there was one signing that they need to make, it to be a world-class number nine, I think that that's where I would spend the money for Chelsea the next summer. But I think he, you know, yeah, he got a hat trick, but let's calm down. It's a good first step for him, and let's just hope he continues to develop.
Yeah,
I'm definitely glad he's been able to break back into the team. I thought this was like a really good performance, but you know, I agree with you guys.
Yeah.
I think that he is pretty overhyped. I mean, I was getting so much social media about Christian Pulisic right after the hat trick.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a good hat trick, but it's against Burnley.
Pub team.
They weren't, the second goal was a pretty big deflection. It was, he got a free header, you know what I mean? So a player at this level of, you know, of quality, a player of quality should be scoring those goals. But at the same time, he's an American, and I think I like how he plays kind of differently than, I would say, the average American.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's pretty direct. He likes taking the ball and likes going at players.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that he'll come good, and I think that, you know, it's only up from here.
Yeah, I mean I personally want to see him do well. I don't hate the guy, but I just think he's got a long way to adapt to the terms of the Premier League and how to play against teams like Burnley. Obviously, he did score a hat trick, but teams like Burnley, where they're just going to rough you up, Stoke City if they were with Premier League, that kind of Tony Pulis team. But yeah, Pulisic, I think he's been, because he's American, like you said, and social media outlets like Bleacher Report, I think they're the key, like, kind of, they're the guilty parties of these things.
Absolutely.
Stuart Holden and that, who's that, Steve Nash and kind
Steve
of
Steve Nash, yeah.
You know what I mean? So people like that, I think they are taking national pride to a whole new level when it comes to, like, soccer. It's like, oh, what's Pulisic? Oh, Pulisic ate oatmeal for breakfast. Oh, well, you know what I mean? Like, they keep talking about
it. But I mean, in fairness, I think Pulisic, you know, I think he has potential to be the best American soccer player
easily
because you know he is already taking, he never played in the MLS, you know, nothing against MLS, but you look at what people say is the best American soccer player of all time is Landon Donovan, and he spent most of his career with the LA Galaxy. He played for Everton a bit, and then obviously besides them you have like Alexi Lalas and Clint Dempsey, you know, who are figures for the MLS. He can be the first American player that is, you know, tearing it apart or doing very well in Europe.
Yeah.
And I think that in itself, you know, if he has a constant career of good, you know, good forms, in Europe, I think that'll already be enough to put him at the top of that list. So, yeah. I mean, I think that's why the American soccer fans are just so hyped up and excited about him.
I hope for Pulisic's sake and American soccer fans' sake that they build a team around him, because I really saw I think it was the 2014 World Cup where I think America were they quarter finalists against Portugal,
round of 16. They made it out of one of the group of deaths with Portugal, Germany, and Ghana, I believe is the last team, and they made it to the round of 16 and they lost to Belgium.
So like that, I think I remember watching that those US games and I was actually pretty excited by them, and I think players like DeAndre Yedlin, I don't know how you guys feel about him, but I think he's a solid right back. Obviously he's a Premier League regular, so you know, we'll see. And players like Jermaine Jones, I always liked. I thought he was pretty solid. But by the way, how does what's his name, Bradley, how does he get into the team?
Michael Bradley. Couldn't tell you.
Yeah. I mean, the U.S. Soccer Federation is a whole different, you know, I think we could do a podcast just on them because they're a mess.
Coming soon.
You know,
yeah.
They lost to Canada for the first time in God knows how many years. So I think that although they do have some talent like Pulisic, and, you know, also big news, Serginho Dest, the right back from Ajax, announced recently that he's going to be playing for the United States rather than Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some up-and-coming talents. You know, there's Josh Sargent, who's also playing in Germany. But it just seems like the talent, although it's coming through, it's more promising than it has been in recent years. You know, the management by the federation is kind of being the downfall of you know, the national team.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, next we're going to move on to my favorite topic, which is kind of the crazy merry-go-round that is Arsenal. So we drew 2-2 with Crystal Palace, which on paper doesn't look great, but I thought that we played a half-decent game, and I thought we were kind of wrongfully – I thought that goal might have been wrongfully disallowed at the end. But
it was as well. Yeah, it was.
It was tough to still see the draw, but definitely the biggest point to come out of it was what happened with Granit Xhaka coming off the field. I kind of as a Arsenal supporter, watching that is pretty upsetting. I think that he gets a lot of stick that isn't necessarily deserved. I think that the club is too tough on him. I think that everyone kind of comes down on him. But at the same time, I don't think that his reaction was warranted either.
Yeah.
I guess to lay it out for people that didn't watch.
Yeah.
He was subbed off in the 61st minute.
Yeah.
For a youth academy player.
Saka.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he hadn't been having a great game. You know, he wasn't doing anything incredible, but he obviously wasn't having a poor game either necessarily. And so on his way off the field, he was started getting jeered. He started getting booed by the fans. And he got all pissed off. He took his shirt off. He was apparently swearing towards the fans.
He even cupped his ears.
Cupped his ears, and went straight down the tunnel. And supposedly, he just left the stadium. Supposedly, he went straight home. He didn't actually stay to the end of the game. And there was actually a couple senior players who, they weren't named, but there were some players who actually went to his house afterwards to kind of check in on him and make sure that, you know, everything was all right. And so, you know, seeing that as an Arsenal fan again, like, I don't think it was warranted. I think it's kind of bad. It's a bad show of the club to have your supporters, you know, no matter what, you shouldn't be booing your captain. You know what I mean? He's good. No matter, you know, what your opinion of him is, you know, he's going out and he's still trying. He's putting an effort. He puts on the armband knowing that he's going to have to go out and play in front of these people. But then again, on the other side, I don't think his reaction was good. I think he should have just kind of, you know, taken it, you know, sat down and just accepted it for what it is. But I would get, what are you guys' opinions on this?
I mean, to put it as nicely as I can, Granit Xhaka is absolute rubbish. The worst center midfielder in the Premier League. They paid more for him than Chelsea paid for N'Golo Kanté, and Arsenal were actually in for Kanté. Arsenal are an absolute joke right now. I mean, for a club that may have looked like they were on the up, you know, I don't mean to just like absolutely trash Arsenal right now, but there's, I don't think there's anything good you can say about the club right now. I mean, Xhaka being the captain in itself to me is laughable. I don't think he's a player that shows any leadership qualities. He's always getting red cards. He's always getting yellow cards. He's always had a temper on the pitch. And I'm not saying that the fans were justified necessarily in, you know, booing him off the field. That's definitely tough. But I mean, if someone like John Terry, who, you know, a lot of people think is like, you know, that epitome, icon epitome of a captain. If John Terry's getting jeered at by the Chelsea fans, is John Terry going to go cry at home about it? No, he's not. And I think that what Xhaka did just shows in itself why in the world is he the captain for your club.
That's definitely true. I agree. Firstly, I want to kind of break it down as well. So thinking about Xhaka coming off, gets booed. This is his place of work, right? So first and foremost, if you, I know it's nothing like going to work in an office and stuff like that, but I mean, it's probably even worse. Like, it's a high pressure environment. You're expected, for the amount of money that these guys are on, you know, you're expected to perform each and every week, and you go into training each and every day. I think first of all, Arsenal fans, disgraceful treatment of their own captain. Doesn't matter who's the captain. It could be Mesut Ozil. It could be a kid that's come through the youth ranks. Whoever it is, as much as Xhaka does have to respect the club, and obviously he didn't because by going after the fans, the club have to respect him and the fans have to respect him. And I think what the fans did was disgraceful, obviously, and then Xhaka, what he did was disgraceful. Xhaka definitely doesn't have the qualities for me to be a captain. I think I would, in honest, if I was, I mean, I don't want to be Unai Emery because who wants to be him, but yeah. if I was Unai Emery, I would, I mean, I don't think you can go back on your word now, but I think at the start of the season, he should have put Hector Bellerin as captain, because if you look at that team, I don't think there's any academy graduates that are actually like first team kind of quality. But Hector Bellerin has been there since, I think, 16. He's kind of Spanish and an English citizen or something like that. But he knows the club through and through. He's grown up, played the games. And I think he should be the captain. I think Socrates should be the vice-captain. But yeah, Xhaka, nowhere near the quality or the personality to lead a team like Arsenal.
For me, I know when I watch the games, and I might be like a hot take or not, I don't know. But for me, when I watch the games, the player I see kind of, not, I wouldn't even necessarily say leading the team, but putting in the energy would be Guendouzi for me. I know he's young, and I'm definitely not saying to, you know, make him the captain, but for me, when I watch Arsenal play, I see him, and he's going out, and he's really running, and you can tell he really wants to win. So again, I think Xhaka should be stripped of the captaincy. I think that was poor. I don't think he should be starting. I don't really think he should be playing that much. But I think that, you know, someone like Guendouzi, who's going to be going out and putting in that type of effort, should be more of a choice of captain than Xhaka. I think obviously there's a lot of problems at Arsenal. I think Unai Emery needs to go would be number one. I think Unai Emery needs to be sacked. I don't think he knows what he's doing. I think he's putting his faith in the wrong players. Another one would be, again, this might be a hot take too, but I think that they need to like try to play Mesut Ozil like maybe once or twice. I think that it seems that Unai Emery was in an agreement with the board and with the club that they're not going to play Ozil. Right. That's what I heard. But I think that, you know, a player of that quality and a club that isn't doing this well, I think you need to try every option and maybe explore the, you know, once world class player on your bench who isn't even, you know, suiting up for the game. So I think, you know, maybe we just make Pepe captain and just, you know, just put him like only player on the field or something like that. Yeah. But I don't know.
I think Unai Emery, I don't know which Spanish restaurant Arsenal picked him out of, but this guy, I mean, he I don't think he did well at PSG. He won a league and title, but that was it. Yeah. And he could fail like Thomas Tuchel.
I could have been manager at PSG. It's a farmers league.
You could literally send in your football manager resume, your FIFA resume, and then
just tell your players to go play and exactly. Like they're gonna
but
win.
So. Unai Emery, I don't think he's got the personality for the Premier League first and foremost. He's nowhere near, you know, the tactical brains like Arsene Wenger is. I don't think he has a style of play that he wants to play, like an identifiable kind of way to play. I think, touching on your point, I think the only reason why Ozil isn't getting a game is because he's seen as that guy who, on the offensive third, he's terrific. He's a great playmaker. He creates a lot of chances for other people, and obviously he has Pepe on one side, Aubameyang, Lacazette around him, and on the pitch he'll be great. But on the other third, on the defensive third, he lacks nothing. He doesn't do. He lacks, you know, the defensive kind of qualities. He doesn't track back. He looks lazy. Maybe it's just the sort of player that he's always been in his life, because I think that's what the problem and the facts are. But Ozil, yeah, I mean, I think for a guy who you're paying $350,000 a week to play or to have on your roster, I think you definitely have to give him a chance.
Give him a run out. I mean, just see what happens. Give it a go.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, Arsenal, I think, you know, and just like Tottenham, but I think Arsenal's right now is worse than Tottenham. You know, North London in general is just in turmoil. Right
yeah.
Now. But like as you guys were saying, honestly, you know, Hector Bellerin as the captain is actually not that bad of a shout. But honestly, someone that young,
yeah,
like it's also tough to say that's your best option. I personally think it would be Socrates, even though he hasn't been there that long.
Yeah.
But I think he's shown the qualities. And honestly, I think that the best thing that Arsenal can do for the club right now is sack Emery, and they need to bring in the special one, Jose Mourinho.
Mourinho will have to go there.
I think he's the only one that's going to salvage something of this Arsenal team right now.
Yeah.
Because everybody says Mourinho, oh, he's so, you know, similar, even Max Allegri at this point, you know, they did interview him, you know, he also, you know, but he's a little more linked towards United than he is Arsenal. But they need someone that's just going to, you know, when a team is doing poorly, the first thing you need to do is fix them at the back.
Mm-hmm.
You need to make sure that you're not conceding goals, you know. It's almost like playing to make sure you're not going to lose, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of the first step, because Mourinho's going to come in and he will fix the team defensively.
Mm.
Yes, they're probably going to be parking the bus, and the fans probably are going to hate that, because Arsenal are a club that, you know, traditionally, you know, plays a more free-flowing style of football. But desperate times call for desperate measures, and I think that, you know, if Mourinho's at the helm there, you know, he's very controversial, but right towards the beginning, you know, before he loses the locker room, which is usually his downfall at a club, he does very well, and I think he'll just solidify them in the back. And then obviously if you're solid in the back and you do have players like Lacazette and Aubameyang, and maybe you can throw Pepe in there, but you know, then maybe you can get things working a little bit better for the club.
I agree. Yeah, so Xhaka, for me, Xhaka needs to restrict to the captaincy, but we'll see. Unai Emery needs to, I don't know. I think he needs to be ousted. I don't think Jose Mourinho, I mean, I can't see Mourinho going to Arsenal. Only just talking off that for the history between him and Arsene Wenger, but, you know, we shall see. We'll keep the updates. We'll keep the viewers updated on that one for sure.
Yeah, so also, you know, just to touch a bit upon the Italian league, the Serie A, over this weekend, actually not much exciting games going on. You know, there was the big game between AC Milan and Roma. That was probably the biggest game. Roma picked up a 2-1 win.
Yeah.
And obviously Juve, the league leaders, they tied away to Lecce. No Ronaldo. He got rested. Very boring game. Both goals were scored off a PK, and one of them was DeLitt, you know, with the whole handball, you know, and they were making jokes after that. That next game, they, like, photoshopped his arms off his body, and they're like, this is how DeLitt's going to have to play, because it's not the first time he's given up a penalty this season for, you know, a supposed, you know, handball, and, you know, that rule in itself is, you know, very tough.
Yeah.
You know, like they said, should the players play with their hands tied behind their back? So it's tough, but yeah. And Dybala did score the goal off the penalty. Mm-hmm. He's been on a great run of form.
Yeah, definitely.
And Juve actually ended up getting lucky that Inter couldn't capitalize and take over the first spot, and they also drew away to Parma 2-2. So a bit of an uneventful weekend in Italy.
I see. Well, I mean, we've got two kind of they're shaping up to be two great title challenges, title run-ins for England and Italy, it looks like. And we'll definitely be keeping up to date. I definitely want to view a bit more of Italian soccer, because the Juventus and Inter, I mean, now that Juventus have got an actual challenger in Inter Milan, I definitely want to keep viewing those. But let's move on to this last segment of this episode, podcast picks. Today we are going to be looking and predicting the following games: Everton versus Tottenham, Roma versus Napoli, Borussia Dortmund versus Wolfsburg, and Aston Villa versus Liverpool. Gents, what do you think, Everton versus Tottenham?
Well, first, I just want to say that this is finally the weekend where I turn things around.
Okay.
For Everton Tottenham, I'm going to go with a 2-0 win for Everton.
Ooh.
I'm actually a fan of Everton. I don't think they've been having the best season. Mm. You know, they're, you know, historically one of those teams that, you know, they do spend a bit of money. You know, last window they spent a bit of money. This summer they spent a bit of money. And they're always kind of trying to push towards that, you know, Europa League and Champions League spot. But they can never really seem to do it. But I think they're going to do well. And they're playing at home, and they're just going to capitalize on bad form from Tottenham.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you, Josh. I definitely like Everton, and I really want them to do well. But for me, at least this week, I'm going for a 1-0 to Spurs. I think that Spurs is just the better team. I think Harry Kane's going to nick, like, an early goal, and then that'll be that.
Okay, cool. I think, two teams that are currently in the doghouse right now, they're not having the best of seasons, either of them. I think with it being at Goodison, I think Everton have more of a chance, obviously, the home crowd. I've gone for 2-2. I think Tottenham and Everton, like I said, it's going to be a feisty affair, because they both desperately need a win, and I think they're both in the bottom half now of the Premier League, so they both need a win, and I think it will be an exciting game, I hope, at least for the neutral, which I think we all are for that game. So yep, I've gone 2-2, a 2-2 draw for the Everton and Tottenham. Definitely, I have a soft spot for Charlison as well, so I definitely want to see him kind of bag a few goals and have a you know, pick his season up almost. So let's move on to Roma versus Napoli. Josh, what have you got for that?
So I have a 3-3 draw.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you have to know about the Serie A is that whenever there are these big games, it's not, you know, like, there's always, like, when a game involves Napoli, Fiorentina, or Atalanta, there's always high-scoring games.
Always.
Like, last year in the Coppa Italia semifinal, there was, like, a 5-4 win for Atalanta, and then a 3-2 win for Fiorentina. Like, there's always crazy high scoring games, especially when there's like I said, Napoli and Roma with their new coach Paolo Fonseca, who's traditionally always pushing up the field. He loves playing a high press.
True.
So two attacking teams going at it, and you know, Napoli, although they did pick up Manolas to pair up with Koulibaly, they haven't solidified their partnership much yet. So I expect it to be a high-scoring affair, and it is at the Olimpico, so I expect Roma to nick a point.
So what you're saying is, if I was a betting man, I'd put about $200 on a high-scoring game, probably over 3 goals or something like that.
Yeah. So put $1,000.
I put my money where my mouth is.
Yeah.
Alejandro, what have you got for this one?
So I gave it a 1-1 because I didn't know any of that before Josh told me. So I thought the Italian league, it's going to be a lot of defense and a low scoring game. So we'll see. I, you know, picked 1-1, but I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, me too. I haven't really been keeping up with Serie A apart from Inter and Juve. But looking at, I did my research as I normally do because I want to win this thing. So looking at both teams' results and their recent form, I just think Napoli edge it. I think Roma haven't been the attacking kind of dominance that, I mean, the attacking kind of force that they should have been. I think Dzeko is a great, great striker, went on his day and he needs the service. But I think Napoli, for me, I like Irving Lozano a lot. I think he's an exciting player. I don't know if he's been playing too regularly because, like I said, I haven't been keeping up, but I think he could. He definitely has the potential and the ability to turn it on, and hopefully he does when these two sides meet. So I've gone for a 2-1 win away for Napoli. And yeah, that is the Serie A one done. Let's go on to Borussia Dortmund versus Wolfsburg. Josh, what have you got for that one?
I'm going 2-1 for Dortmund. I think Dortmund, you know, they did have a disappointing loss to Inter in the Champions League. But I think in terms of the Bundesliga, they're even, you know, they could look like front runners. You know, the title's definitely between them and Bayern.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they'll push Bayern more than they did even last season. And they'll get a comfortable win.
Cool.
I had it going 2-0 to Dortmund. I think Dortmund's a really good team. And I just think that they'll, you know, have the quality over Wolfsburg.
Yeah, I've gone for 2-0 as well. I think Dortmund strong in attack, but Wolfsburg also, when you look at their stats and the results, recent results, they've only conceded 5 goals all season in the league. So yeah, I think it's going to be a tough one to definitely predict. But I think Dortmund, you know, always at the stadium, you know, the stadium that they're at and the yellow wall, it always plays a psychological factor for the away team. So I think 2-0, which I have predicted, will be the outcome. And let's move on to the last one. Liverpool away to Aston Villa. Aston Villa are a notorious ground for kind of away teams to kind of falter at and to not have it easy, basically. Josh, what have you got for this one?
I'm going 2-0 to Liverpool. I think that Liverpool, obviously unbeaten in the Premier League still, and, you know, 6 points ahead of City. I think that's, you know, obviously City are going to have to beat Liverpool both mm-hmm. times they meet, you know, to close that gap, because I think it's going to be hard for Liverpool to drop points elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But if they do end up dropping points, I don't think it's going to be to Aston Villa.
Mm-hmm.
I think it, you know, could be to, you know, a Chelsea, you know, a Leicester. I know they already played Manchester Leicester, United. But they I mean,
maybe,
honestly,
maybe one day.
Honestly, almost, you know, if it wasn't for that Lallana, you know, goal that came in.
Yeah.
But, you know, like Leicester, when they play them at the King Power Stadium, and then obviously City. So it's going to be very hard for Liverpool to drop points. And I think that when they do, that it's going to be against a club that's not Aston Villa.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be holding out for Villa, but I can't see it going many other ways. I have Liverpool beating them 3-0. I just think, you know, Liverpool is one of the best teams, arguably the best team in the world.
Yeah.
So I think that they're just going to cook them.
True. Well, I have a bit of a soft spot for Aston Villa and a few of their players, like John McGinn and Jack Grealish and a few of those.
You've got a soft spot for
Sheffield,
Aston Villa.
With good reason.
Leicester.
He loves supporting bigger clubs than United.
With good reason. I mean, Aston Villa are one of those historic English clubs, and they've been around for donkey's years. So, I think Aston Villa, they came off of that 3-0 loss away to Manchester City, and now they're going the next weekend hosting Liverpool now. So it's a tough couple of weeks for the boys at Aston Villa, but I think the crowd and atmosphere could definitely give them a boost. But with that being said, I don't think they're going to get that boost that will give them the edge over Liverpool. I do think they'll be able to, I think if they play the way that Manchester United did the week before, I think Aston Villa could definitely create a few chances and maybe even score them. But saying that, Liverpool, I think, far too superior, far too resilient, as they showed against Tottenham. So I've gone for a 3-2 victory for Liverpool away, and hopefully extending their unbeaten run. So, boys, that is the end of the podcast. Just wanted a quick note. I've few friends of mine have told me that they listened to episode two and they were generally not the biggest of soccer fans, but they found it insightful about like the whole racism in soccer and how we kind of generalize that. So it kind of really gave me a good feeling inside. I don't know if you guys heard anything about it from any of your friends or whatnot, but
I had people who said that they definitely enjoyed hearing about, you know, more of those types of issues and similar type of thing that they wouldn't say they're necessarily soccer fans, but they were glad to see that, you know, people were addressing some of these problems.
Yeah, I mean, like we reiterated time and time again in the last podcast, you know, it's an important topic, and you know, the more conversation there is on it, the better.
Yeah, definitely, and it will be definitely touching on topics like that, definitely in the coming few episodes. Well, that is an end to episode 3 of the Transatlantic Soccer Podcast. Thanks for joining. We are out bi-weekly every on a Thursday. We'll be out this Thursday, Halloween Thursday. Cannot wait for this weekend, boys. And yeah, thank you for listening. And this has been Jacob Robson. I've been joined by
Alejandro Windsor
and Josh Crespo.
Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.